Hello, I'm Renee Vaughan Sutherland, and welcome to Greater Than 11%, a weekly podcast that explores roles and opportunities within the creative industries, with the aim of contributing to increasing diversity across the board, in addition to promoting some awesome women. Episode 23, I'm joined by arts educator and artist Marilyn Ford. Marilyn studied fine art at Middlesex University, which is where we met, and then she went on to do her teacher training and qualify as a teacher, securing a position at Oak Tree, a school for special needs children aged between 7 and 19 in London. Owing to her incredible talents as an artist, her passion for teaching, and her being one of the most empathetic and kindly people I know, she quickly transitioned to running the art department for the school. Marilyn's work and commitment to working with children with differing needs began long before her teacher training. She had, whilst at school herself, committed to caring and supporting parents of children with special needs within local charity and educational groups. She's highly committed and spends long hours working to ensure that she's teaching and communicating and connecting those in which she teaches. Marilyn's skills as an artist are broad and varied. She can illustrate, sculpt, animate, film, edit, and she's also a photographer. She's also a musician, having played the bass in a number of bands. She's also a compassionate and dedicated animal rights activist, having participated in many fundraising events for endangered species and protests to stop animal cruelty. And she has long been a vegan, in the days when you were considered a freak and the best you could hope for was a plate of chips when going out for dinner. She is truly one of the most beautiful people I know, and after a bit of persuasive strong-arming, I'm pleased to say she finally agreed to come and chat about her creative career and life. Marilyn, welcome to Greater Than 11%.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
So I'm wondering if we can start and talk about what you do as a teacher. What is that role?
So at my school, I'm head of art, which means I'm in charge of the art department. I'm lucky to work with a few teachers who also teach art, mm-hmm. and we, you know, meet up, talk about schemes of work, and I also am in charge of the art budget and the displays around the school, art exhibitions, and I teach art all the time. I teach every single class apart from one this year.
Okay. Yeah. So how many classes is that?
10 in total.
Oh my gosh, that's quite a lot.
Yeah, and I'm also head of school council as well, which is a role I really enjoy.
And what is head of school council?
So school council is a space for the children to talk about their needs and wants in the school. We talk about politics, but we also talk about fundraising and the wider environment. And it's a chance for them to talk about how they feel about Oak Tree School and if they want to change anything or how they can make it better. Okay. That's quite interesting. So, yeah, got to do quite a few things.
Yeah. So I kind of mentioned it a little bit in the intro, but can you tell me what your career journey was and what's your path to arriving at this point in time?
I've always been passionate about art since I was a child, you know, something we always did as kids. My brother and my sister are artists, and my mum and my dad, you know, used to encourage us all the time to make art and draw and paint and sculpt and stuff. And as they're musicians as well, make music. So we're a very creative family. The teaching side of my life within a special needs environment happened when I was about 17 or 18, actually, and my friend was working at a play scheme for children with special needs, and I had a volunteer day there, and I absolutely loved it, and I got asked to stay. And I worked there throughout my time at university as well. So throughout college and university, I worked there during the school holidays, supporting children with special needs, either on a one-to-one basis with children with severe autism, or then I got promoted to be the art teacher, actually. So
I didn't know that. That's amazing.
The word got out that I really liked art, and they had like an arts and crafts room, and then we had, you know, like a playroom, and then we had a soft playroom. So I always got put in charge of the art room, and I loved it. So once I had finished university, I got a call back from one of the ladies that ran the play scheme, and she said, oh, are you looking for a job yet? And I said, actually, you know, I don't really know what I'm going to do. You know, I've just graduated. I'll come and have a look around, and I fell in love with the place straight away, really. So I first of all started as a learning support assistant at the school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then I started to kind of think, oh, maybe this isn't what I should do. Maybe I could go on and do some more studying elsewhere. You know, maybe I could go and do animation, or maybe I could do a master's, or maybe, you know, change something up. But I decided to stay for another year, and luckily I did, because the art teacher at the time was leaving. So they asked me if I wanted to be an unqualified teacher for a bit, just to kind of, you know, see if...
Get a feel.
Get a feel for it. And I loved it, again. You know, so I had a really nice timetable, and the art teacher before me, Julie, she was absolutely fantastic. And she trained me up and, you know, showed me the ropes. And then I spoke to my head teacher at the time about doing my teacher training, and I was really fortunate that they put me through my teacher training at my school at the time.
That's awesome.
Yeah, really lucky. So I did my teacher training for a year, and then I worked at a private girls' school, which I didn't particularly like.
A bit different to where you are now.
Very different, yeah. I wasn't really allowed to talk to the students about anything outside of our lesson, which didn't suit the way that I taught before, you know, at the special needs school and at the play scheme. You know, conversation and speech and language was such an important thing in the day, and, you know, relationships and friendships and communication conversations was such an important thing. So to go to a school where everything was very strict and, you know, very cut and dry, I found that quite hard. I also worked at a mixed comprehensive secondary school, which I liked, but, you know, having 32 children in a class, 7 of them having special educational needs and no extra support, kind of shocked me a little bit, if I'm honest. And I felt like I couldn't give each child the support that they needed. You know, I couldn't split myself 32 ways. And again, I got some feedback that I was giving the children too much support. So I kind of thought, actually, no, I think special needs teaching is my thing. So I decided to apply for the permanent job at Oaktree School, and I've been there ever since.
Which is, must be coming up to
11 years. Oh no, it might be in September, it might be 12 years.
Wow.
Yeah, including my time as an LSA there, and then my teacher training, then going back and stuff. So yeah.
Wow. So you've seen like kids go from maybe 7 right through to 19.
I have.
Actually,
I watched them graduate.
Oh my gosh.
You know, had their prom and helped them into the limousine as they were having their party for the night. Yeah, I'm very fortunate. I've seen children grow from, yeah, like you said, I've seen my whole first class graduate and move off to college, which was a really nice thing to do. Yeah.
And so what is it about working with children with differing needs in a more concentrated way? What does that give to you and also your art practice?
I think for me it's creatively stimulating, because I have to come up with unique ideas. I have to come up with, you know, within a day, if I teach 5 lessons in a day, I have to come up with 5 different topics, 5 different lessons. So my, you know, my creative brain loves that, because, you know, it's like, oh, like, how can I change this to suit this child? And, oh, what can I do with this? And how can I make, like, Frida Kahlo interesting to this group? And how can I do this with this group? So, you know, I actually do really enjoy planning topics and schemes of work, because it does make me, as an artist, think about the things that I like. And if I think that that would be interesting to a group of teenagers, how do I make that really interesting to them? Or if I've got a group with severe learning difficulties, how could I get them interested in art, and how could I get them to move on their skills and build up their muscles and, you know, enjoy their time in the art room?
Sounds awesome. Sounds like lots of fun.
It is really fun, yeah.
And tiring. I know that only because we speak.
Yeah.
Not when we're recording podcasts.
Yeah. It's incredibly tiring. Yeah. It's long days, emotionally draining, physically draining. Mm.
And how do you protect yourself in that? Because you do give a lot. I mean, it's funny that both your teacher trainings were saying you were giving a lot.
Oh, yes.
And then you've gone into a school that has even probably slightly higher demands, but in different ways. So how do you manage that? Because you do give a lot of yourself.
Well, it is hard. And to be honest, I don't think I do manage it very well, if I'm, you know, totally honest. You know, some days I might not get home until 8 o'clock at night, and, you know, I start at 8. So very long days. And you take home a lot of emotions and a lot of information from the day. You know, I'm not just teaching art. There's, you know, child protection issues that might come up, or you might be worrying about a child that, you know, that was upset in your lesson and that day for some reason, and you want to work out why they're upset, or you forgot to phone someone's parent about something. So your brain is constantly in teacher mode. Even at the weekend, you know, we're expected to be doing our planning and our resourcing and data. And it is quite, it's a full-on job. It's a vocation, isn't it?
Yeah. You know?
But yeah, I do make sure I take some time out and hang out with friends and hang out with my dog and my cat. You know, try and continue my own art practice.
So can you talk about how does the arts and the teaching of visual arts play a role in your kind of schools and your experiences within special needs schools?
I think art is a very important subject for children and also children with special needs because, you know, something I do feel really passionate about, and I know I'm biased because I'm the art teacher, but, you know, there's a big push at the moment about English and maths and science, and a lot of schools are actually cutting art, dance, music and drama out of their curriculums. And I find that really sad because in our school, the students absolutely love art. Mm. You know, I could say 1 out of 100 that is a bit like, no, not today. You know, it's not their favourite subject, yeah. But the rest of them absolutely love it. And I think that's because it's a space for them to explore and experiment and to try things out and, you know, make mistakes, if you want to call them mistakes, and learn and problem solve. There's not really many set rules, if you know what I mean, but there's a lot of boundaries within the classroom. Mm. So, and we talk and we chat and, you know, it's a really nice, relaxed environment. But, I mean, art has so many benefits for mental health, for mindfulness, for, you know, building up your core strength, your muscles. Mm-hmm. You know, for some of our children, especially children with cerebral palsy, who, you know, find, you know, their fine motor skills need a bit of building up. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many ways of doing that within art, mm-hmm. holding paintbrushes and playing with clay and sand. And I just think it would be a real shame if the government did keep cutting funding for education and the arts.
Yeah. And I think that's across the board within special needs, but also in the wider kind of context as well.
Yeah.
I find it fascinating because any of the arts give us an opportunity to connect and to create exchange, not in kind of expected frameworks of what we know.
Mm.
So it's such a shame that things are just getting reduced and reduced.
Yeah. And, I mean, if you look in society, art is quite respected, you know. Mm-hmm. You look at the galleries and when it comes to arts education, it's seen as like a DOS subject, yeah. Or, you know, a secondary subject that I think, considering it is cross-curricular and is about science, it is maths, it is English, you know, I think, I really hope that, you know, art continues to be a subject that students love in the future.
I think it's inevitable, like it's impossible for it not to be. It's more about having access to it, isn't it? Mm. I think that's the major concern. Pulling it out of educational structures is, yeah, diabolical going forward. Because we then create a generation of people that can't communicate within the arts.
Yeah.
Well, we're not going to solve that today in this podcast.
It's true.
So I'm going to ask you the next question. So you've kind of given us a bit of overview of this, but what is a typical work day, if there is a typical day? Because I imagine you get a lot of surprises from day to day.
That's true. Yeah, okay. So when I get in the morning, I would start setting up my classroom, preparing it for the first lesson. Then every morning in our school, we have a staff briefing where we talk about the day ahead, any concerns we have. And then I'll carry on setting up my classroom and have my first class. Then it's break time, have about 15 minutes for a quick cup of tea. if you haven't got photocopying to do, or laminating, or running around.
But it's taking me back to my school days. Teachers walking around with mugs of tea, or photocopying a million math sheets.
That's it. And then there we have two sessions after break. So the students go outside at that time, and they love it. So if I'm on duty, mine is swings, which is quite nice. And then I have two sessions after break. Then I either sit with the children for lunch to promote kind of, you know, speaking and listening and communication skills. I think lunch is a really important time for children as well. You know, it should be a really stress-free time where we can just sit and relax, you know. Mm. If I'm not sitting with them, I'll have my half an hour lunch break and then I'll go on a duty afterwards. So today I had dance club.
Nice.
Where the students love to DJ and dance.
And do you dance?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
I learned how to floss today. And then I'll have another session, oh no, two sessions after lunch as well. So 50-minute lessons.
Wow.
And then at the end of the day...
50.
Yeah. And then the end of the day, the students in our school get taken home by bus.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a bus group and then put the kids on the bus around about 3. So by the time all the students have left, it's about 3:15. And then I normally stay till about 6, planning... making resources, mm-hmm. organising the next day or the week ahead. On a bad night, maybe 8:00.
Just catching up and...
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So how much intuition comes into play in relation to the curriculum and also teaching on a daily basis to what students kind of may need or how you feel, what may help them develop?
A lot of intuition. Mm-hmm. So within each class... our maximum amount of students is 12.
Mm-hmm.
So I may plan a lesson, and as soon as the students come into my room, I can sense if there's any, I don't know, arguments that happen at playtime, mm-hmm. or you have to sort those out, or if a student, you know, might not have had breakfast that morning and is hungry. You know, you do have to sense what is going on in the classroom and how everyone's feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Before you can even start to introduce the lesson. And a lot of our students do have really low self-esteem, so I may introduce a topic and, you know, explain the activity for the day, and a student might refuse to do it. Happened today. It was to take a selfie on an iPad, and one of my students just plain refused to do it because he doesn't have a really strong, a positive self-image, so took us quite a while. Luckily, in each class, there's 2 LSAs, so mm-hmm. learning support assistants who sit with the children and help. And they're amazing. You know, they really know the kids. They're the ones that are with the kids all day, mm-hmm. every day. You know, we're all doing all the personal care and health and safety stuff with them and everything. So we kind of have to talk to my team and say, you know, how can we help this person start making work, and why is this student doing it like this, and mm-hmm. how can we help this person get their idea across and mm-hmm. communicate their ideas? So, yeah, there's a lot of intuition is needed, mm-hmm. a lot of patience is needed.
And being hyper alert. So, yeah. Because if there's 12 children, you've got to kind of spread yourself 12 ways.
Yeah, definitely.
Without giving one too much and one too little. And
Yeah. Definitely. And each child has their own needs, so mm. what works for one doesn't work for another. Mm. And you kind of have to differentiate your learning by 12, really. Mm. I know, you know, normally they say, oh, you differentiate by 3 groups, but with our students, it's pretty much an individualised mm. learning plan that, you know, we really make sure each child gets some benefit out of the lesson.
It's amazing, man.
Oh. It's not just me, is it? A lot of lovely people that work at my school that make it happen.
I have no doubt there is, but it is amazing that you and your colleagues, you know, are able to do that on a daily basis. Like, it's a real commitment, I think.
Mm.
And I don't think everyone can do it.
Mm.
So what skills do you need to be an effective arts teacher, first and foremost? And then what would you say, what skills do you need to work in a school with students with special needs?
So to be an effective art teacher... you know, it's good if you have your specialist subject, but you do also have to be quite versatile. So if you're a photographer, you can't just teach photography all the time, unfortunately. Mm. You do have to kind of have, you know, be a bit of a jack of all trades, mm. and know a bit of this and a bit of that, because you need a really varied curriculum, mm-hmm. that would benefit each student and each age group and everything. You have to be a patient person. So... and not rigid. Unfortunately, like we were talking about earlier, things don't always go to plan. So you do have to think on your feet,
mm-hmm.
quite quickly,
mm-hmm.
to try and kind of change the path of a lesson that might not be going so well, or mm-hmm. to help a student who might not be as engaged as you want them to be. For actual teacher training, they would like you to have a degree in art. That could be illustration, mm-hmm. fine art, graphic design, that's okay, and then you have to do your teacher training. And you can either do the year teacher training, where you learn on the job, mm-hmm. or you can go and do your PGCE, and I think that's 3 years now.
Okay. Yeah. So in terms of then working with children with special needs?
During my teacher training, I didn't get taught how to be a teacher in a special needs school. Mm-hmm. That came with working in a special needs school and picking it up. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is intuition, and a lot mm-hmm. of it was just, you know, my experience from before when mm-hmm. I was working at the play scheme. So, yeah, if anyone is thinking of going into working in special needs, I suggest they go and have a look around and kind of or volunteer for a few days and kind of get an understanding of how a special needs school runs, because it is very different mm-hmm. and the pace is very different and the outcomes are very different to those of a mainstream school.
So one thing that when you were talking about being an effective arts teacher, it really struck me, especially in the context of where you work, like, you can't be precious, because I know you put a lot of effort and energy and focus into some fantastic lesson, which may just go completely out the window yeah. within, like, 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're kind of dealing with rejection.
All the time.
Yeah.
Or you stay up, you know, you stay at work for a couple of extra hours to make resources that you try out and they don't work at all yeah. and unhelpful.
And you'll be like, this is going to be awesome, yeah. and love it, and just reject it.
Pretty much, yeah. So, yeah, you're right, you can't be precious. And you can't push for a certain outcome, like I was saying. So one of my things is about the process. Mm-hmm. I actually started a group with two colleagues of mine who are both fine artists as well uh-huh. and LSAs. And we were discussing how some people rush the students to create a final piece. Mm-hmm. Like, that's your final piece. That's what you have got to be proud about. Mm-hmm. But I don't really... I care about what the final piece looks mm-hmm. like, but that's not the learning. You know, that's mm-hmm. the bit that you can be proud of at the end. But the process is the bit that I really care about. Mm. You know, the problem solving, the exploring, the experimenting. So we started up an art intervention with three students that we picked for personal reasons for them. And it's kind of like an art therapy group, but we're not therapists, mm-hmm. so we're not allowed to call it an art therapy group. Mm-hmm. But we call it process and play. Mm-hmm. And it's a space for those students to just experiment and play with things and splatter paint on the wall like Jackson Pollock and, you know, play with sand and make potions and explore. Mm-hmm. And it's like a safe space where they can just be themselves and just have fun with art and tools, basically.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah, that's probably my favourite part of the week, I think, yeah.
Actually, I think all kids should have access to that.
Yeah.
Definitely. You know, my practice is a lot about process. It's about what you learn. Yeah. I mean, it's great to have a lovely piece at the end that is yeah. like a piece on the floor, but it's what you learn and then what you take to the next piece of work. It's like the springboard for a continual development of one's own kind of creative ideas and then outputs.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome.
Definitely, yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Okay. So, you spend quite a bit of time yourself, outside your teaching role, making art. Yeah. So what do you make? Where is it placed in the world?
So I try to, you know, I wish I did have some more time to make art. You know, after a long day at work and I've used up a lot of my creative energy with the students, sometimes I do find it hard to get motivated. But I draw all the time. I've got sketchbooks and sketchbooks full of ideas and things that I would like to manifest into something one day. I like to kind of keep my skills up, so, you know, I continue to work with clay and photography. Mm-hmm. Nature inspires me a lot, so I go for lots of walks and take lots of pictures and collect materials and things like that. I take part in things like Inktober mm-hmm. to kind of, you know, keep my own creative energy flowing.
And you put those on Instagram, right?
Yeah, I share them on Instagram. Yeah. I do some commission work for friends. I do a bit of filming and editing for my friend's business and his YouTube channel. So that kind of keeps my IT skills up to date. Yeah.
So how do you fuel your creativity? Because so you were just mentioning before that, you know, after work you've spent a lot of creative energy. Mm-hmm. So where do you go to kind of top that up? You know, revive yourself so that you can then put that into your own artistic work.
Mm. I love researching, whether, you know, multiple different topics. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, the internet is absolutely incredible, isn't it? That in the palm of your hand, you can research anything, things from history, you know, other artists. So I do a lot of research. I've got a lot of books, and I do like to read. Mm-hmm. I like to go to galleries. I like to have conversation with my artist friends or, you know, other people who are in similar situations to me or have got similar interests as me. I mean, Instagram's great nowadays, isn't it? Because you can find artists from all over the world and some incredible stuff on there. Things like Pinterest and stuff like that as well, just to pin ideas, you know, to save for later dates and stuff. You know, I'm a very visual person though, so I do like to be constantly looking at pictures and, you know, gathering things up for later use. I don't know when this later use is going to be, but,
day when I'm motivated. You're ready.
Yeah. But then maybe that is my process. Yeah. Maybe that is part of my thing. So I've got all these ideas, and they haven't quite manifested into something that I've shown to someone else, but they exist, you know.
And what's interesting about that is, without a shadow of a doubt, it's actually going into your teaching practice.
Yeah.
In many ways, like on a conscious and subconscious level, because you're constantly looking at images, other artists, history, whatever, and it's kind of going in that then gets put out either in your creative output or your teaching output.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. It's totally true. Without sounding like I just teach stuff that I like to the kids. If I do notice something that is really relevant or really, or, you know, that excites me, then, yeah, I do take that into my planning. So if I'm having a real, you know, having a really nice time doing photography, I have actually booked that in for, like, next term with one of my classes because I think it's a really good skill to learn and it's an easy, accessible thing to do. And I think that there's so many benefits for that. But yeah, you're right. So, but then I actually get to experience when I'm teaching the kids. So, it does actually make a lot of sense. They do intertwine.
Yeah. Cool. So, can you tell me what's been one of the biggest challenges in your career so far?
I would say it would be there's a few key dates within the terms that are very stressful periods with reports and data and grades due and stuff. So there has been many times that I have actually thought, okay, I don't think I can do this anymore. I'm just physically and mentally tired and I think I need to go. It was about 2 years ago I did decide, well, I thought I decided to leave.
Yeah.
And I asked for a sabbatical, but it was denied.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with the fear of not having a job to go back to, I decided to stay. So that was quite a tough time because you're very torn. Even today, you know, I'm very torn between absolutely loving my job and I love teaching, but the paperwork and the politics and the graphs and the data does not interest me at all, and that really kind of does affect me emotionally and mentally. So, you know, I try and always look at the positives and I just, you know, everything I do is for the students and the other stuff I jump through the hoops because I have to.
Can I ask you, are you still thinking of leaving in a career change?
I am, yeah. Again, it's the fear of thinking, oh, what do I do and where do I go and, you know, how, you know, worrying about all the self-promotion that comes with being an artist or, you know, sharing your work with other people, whereas, as I'm saying, you know, it's either been put into my teaching practice or they're hidden in sketchbooks in my room, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there is that, you know, I think a lot of it is fear, and fear of the unknown about my money troubles and, you know, that kind of thing. So I am still thinking of leaving.
And where do you think you would go down the artist route? Is that kind of where your focus?
Yeah, I feel like I am ready to start actually putting time into my creativity. Something that makes me really happy, and I kind of lost my confidence along the way with my talent and stuff, but and because I didn't know exactly what, I haven't got a pinpoint thing, you know, I'm not a photographer or I'm not a printmaker. I think I found it hard because I like to do a bit of everything, whereas I think I'd like to start refining my skills and start to make work mm-hmm. again.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing that. Okay, so what advice would you give to someone wanting to be an arts teacher?
I would say it's an amazing job.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say, do your research, try and plan really fun, engaging activities. Don't be too rigid. You know, it is a really rewarding job. Everyone always asks me that. Is it a rewarding job? It is, actually. The amount of fun and laughter that you get from, you know, painting and drawing and experimenting with materials within a classroom setting is really fun. Mm. Don't be too particular. You know, don't worry about the mess. Clean it up later. Just enjoy the time with the students. Yeah, and try and keep the subject creative and art-based. There's a big push to kind of add a lot of kind of English in there, but sometimes that can kill a bit of creativity. Mm. So, you know, obviously we're building up speech and language all the time, but the process is the most important thing.
So in terms of your own art practice, do you have any projects on the horizon that are coming out of the sketchbooks?
A friend of mine who's in a band, we are hoping to make a music video.
Oh, yeah, cool.
And it's stop motion animation.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's also an artist and makes really cool models. Uh-huh. So we're hoping to get that going, but it has been in talks for many years. So kind of hoping that, like I said, if I do decide to leave my job, then I would have time to do things like that because it's very time consuming. Yeah.
So something I ask everyone is there a career job in the creative industries that you know little about, but have always been curious about, and potentially I could get someone in that role on? And also a woman in the creative industries that you would recommend or suggest that I try and get on greater than 11%?
I would love to learn more about animation, mm-hmm. stop motion animation. Mm-hmm. If I hadn't have done fine art, I wish that I had studied animation at university. So yeah, animation is definitely a big passion of mine, mm-hmm. and I wish I could, you know, improve my skills in that. Mm. I'm an artist, Zaza Delahaye, who is a self-taught artist who works with gold and mm-hmm. creates bespoke jewellery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, follow her on Instagram. And
we should disclose that we both know Zaza Delahaye. I love that you just like thrown that in, like, I don't know who she is.
Handy promotion.
Yeah. Yeah, she's awesome.
Yeah.
I would love to have her on. Yeah, yeah, she makes some incredible jewellery.
Yeah.
I've so loved having you here. I've loved talking to you. So, yeah, thanks, Marilyn.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed, please write a review on Apple Podcasts, as that helps other people find Greater Than 11%. And also stay subscribed to keep up to date on the weekly releases. This podcast is made possible by the support of Hub, an insight-led content agency based in London. A huge thank you to the producers, Pat Murray and James Haberson, and to Mary Continenza for designing the beautiful artwork.